2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
You're listening to Healthy Mind Matters on KSL News Radio.
Thank you for joining us today for Healthy Mind Matters. I'm Maria Chaleos. With me today is Michael Staley. He's a suicide prevention research coordinator at the Utah Office of the Medical Examiner. And we are talking about research that is done after someone has died by suicide. We were talking about families and the questions that you ask families. Are families also hoping, you mentioned the importance of them telling the story of their loved one who has died. Are they also hoping that they're going to be able to glean some information in the end about why or what happened?
I think many are. There's always that next thing that needs to be opened or turned over, or the answer is always kind of like the carrot on the stick that's in front of the rabbit. And so often there's just that answer doesn't exist, and we can turn over all the rocks and we're left in the same place. And in terms of our research, we don't specifically give the family a report after the completion of our time with them. And that primarily is because we're trying to protect the confidentiality of all of the informants that we talk to for that specific death. But for the most part, I think families have had enough time and distance by the time we do these interviews that report isn't all that, you know, they know pretty much what's in it. And the bulk of the information does come from families. So there's really nothing new or surprising to them that they would find out. But I think what it does is participating in these studies is really highlight the complexity of suicide to these families. I think a lot of times people, whether it be their parents or friends or grandparents, fixate on that one thing that happened 2 days prior or a day prior or 15 minutes prior to their death and say that was the thing. And then by participating in these interviews, you know, we're there for 3 hours, sometimes more even, and it really highlights how many things are we asking and how many different domains of questions are we asking. And through that process, they realize, if they hadn't realized before, that this was a really complex, multi-layered issue that preceded this person's death. I think that really helps give them perspective. It wasn't just grounding them from their cell phone or video game, or it wasn't just that breakup alone. It was these other complex factors leading up to that death.
So does it, what you're doing actually helps them sort of work through the process of what happened then?
Yeah. There.
So it goes beyond research, really, and, you know, doesn't it?
Yeah, and that, I will say that's what brings me back to this work day in and day out. If we were just left with the tragedy, I don't know of anybody who would want this job. That's in their right mind.
It's a pretty sad occupation.
It's very heavy.
Yeah.
But we have first of all, it's such an honor that families and friends of people who have died by suicide are willing to tell these stories. And I feel honored personally that they're willing to trust me and the people who volunteer and work with me doing this research with these stories. That really is just very special to me. But it's also cathartic for them. And there is research out there that demonstrates that doing these kinds of interviews is actually therapeutic for families. We're not clinicians or therapists, so I use that word therapeutic with caution. That's why I use the word cathartic. But most of the time, despite the fact that the interviews are difficult, families do feel, and friends do feel, like that this was a good healing part of recovery, even if it takes them a while after the interview to look back on it in that way. And the other part of that is that you know, people who survive a suicide death are at higher risk of suicide themselves. And that's well documented in the research literature. And so I think it's so important for us to connect these people who have survived these tragic deaths to resources, to people who can help, which oftentimes is just somebody else who also lost a son or daughter or spouse or brother or sister or friend to suicide, and to help them feel and know that they're not alone.
Right. I'm wondering if part of the catharsis is that it's hard to talk about with other people.
Absolutely.
People are very uncomfortable talking about the death of someone's child or their, you know, their spouse who has died in this way.
Yeah. I've had several different parents come to me and say, or after the end of the interview, say, you know, this was a lot easier than I thought because you already know so many of the facts. I don't have to tell a story or try to protect you. I can just tell you how it is and how it was. And they find that, again, very cathartic, I think, because I do have an insider knowledge from my perspective in the medical examiner's office that they don't have to worry about me judging them or judging the person that they lost. They don't really have to protect a legacy with me.
Right. I think it's interesting that you chose the word protect, that they didn't need to protect you. I think that says a lot about what they're saying to other people when they are having these conversations.
And that's more about the person they're talking to and not them and their own experience. Because so often I think we think about somebody who has died, and then, you know, if it's an elderly person who died a natural expected death, it's not hard to take that family food, you know, and say, I'm so sorry for your loss. But when it's tragic in these instances, I hear so often just from the general public that I just didn't know what to say. And here's the thing about that. The best thing you can do is find out the things to say and go and be present and say them. The second best thing you can do is just go and be present. And even if you say the wrong thing, you're still present. But the absolute worst thing you can do is say nothing at all. It's so helpful for most of these families to hear the name of the person that they lost, to not skirt around this issue, because that person is somebody that they still love, even though they're no longer here with us on this earth. They still love them, and they still think about them frequently. It's not as though if I come to you, Maria, and talk about the person that you lost, that you would think, oh, you just reminded me that I lost that person.
It's
not like that.
No.
People are thinking about the people they love all the time, just like we are when they're alive, too.
All right. Let's take a break. And you're listening to Healthy Mind Matters on KSL News Radio.